Now, what has been the top regional story of the past year? Most of us would select Ferguson, but there were some other major happenings. Politics was big. So was same-sex marriage and education. For the rest of the program, we'll talk about some of these stories with people involved in the coverage. Shula Newman remains with us. In studio also is political reporter Joe Manis. And joining us by phone is St. Louis Public Radio State House correspondent Marshall Griffin. He is, of course, in Jefferson City. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Joe, good to have you. And Marshall, good to have you. I think we can acknowledge that Ferguson's the big story of the year. Would you agree, everybody?
I think that sort of hands down, yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm just going to run over some of the things that everybody knows by now. We know about the protests. We know about Bob McCollum, the grand jury. We know about Darren Wilson, the officer involved in the shooting, has resigned. And we know that the Ferguson Commission has been established. Joe, let me start with you on another part of the story I think is pretty fascinating. I'll bet you do, too. And that is Governor Nixon and his role in this whole episode. We've talked in the past about his political future. What has this done to his political future?
I think it's hurt it a lot, but whether or not it's hurt it permanently, I don't want to say yet, because I've seen too many cases where politicians seem to have really stepped in it on something, and then a year or two later, they're in great shape. So that's potentially could happen to Nixon, but I think that what it did was hurt his efforts to portray himself as a strong leader, decisive leader, and one who can, and see, he's a Democrat facing an overwhelmingly Republican General Assembly, and he has tried to portray himself as someone who is, while loyal to Democratic values, can work across party lines. Well, the whole Ferguson business brought up the other aspect of his career. He's had an uneasy relationship with many African American politicians going back decades. Not all of it is of his own doing, but that's been the fallout. And the whole Ferguson episode highlighted that, the fact that with the exception of Congressman Lacey Clay, who is a close personal friend of Nixon, going back to when they were in the state Senate together in the 90s, he has never been really close to many African-American Democrats in the state. And the whole Ferguson episode highlighted that, because there was this lack of communication and the fact that he's not real good about when he talks at the mic, having his thought. He tends to think while he's speaking, and sometimes it doesn't come out really well. And that's what happened. And on a national stage, it just made him look bad, even though, I mean, he's a lawyer. He's not stupid, but it didn't make him look good. And if you're, let's say, one of the Democratic potential presidential candidates, and as I've said for years, that the Democrats, like the Republicans, often tend to pick somebody from the coast at the top of the ticket. Well, then they got to get somebody from the Midwest, or they need to. And Nixon had been on a lot of short lists, and I think that he's probably not on those lists now.
It would be a different story, perhaps, if Ferguson were not a national story, a worldwide story, actually.
Yes. Yeah. Now, as I said, it may change a little bit, because the Ferguson whole thing has morphed into also, I mean, the New York, the episode in New York, the episode in Cleveland, I mean, different police shootings. But some of that has taken attention away from the Ferguson specifics. So in some people's minds on a national stage, Nixon's role may fade somewhat. But still, it just doesn't – I think it does hurt his political chances of getting something else after he leaves office in 2016.
Marshall Griffin, let me turn to you with regard to the legislative fallout from the Ferguson story. We heard in our earlier interview that Shula Newman did with Dwayne James, councilman from Ferguson, that they'll be looking to the legislature to remedy some of the problems that surfaced there. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you can expect a flood of bills that will address various topics related to, you know police department procedures, weapons use, tear gas use, of course, body cameras. There's even one that's been proposed by the chair of the legislative Black Caucus that would bar grand juries in Missouri, calling the entire grand jury process outdated and flawed. So we can expect a lot of bills. I mean we're talking, you know, several dozen, I would imagine. And based on the new leadership coming in the House, and based on some of the ones still in the Senate, I would expect very few. I'm not trying to predict at this point. The legislative session hasn't started yet, but I would be surprised if any or just a few of them actually made it out.
The only one, frankly, that probably has a really strong chance is the one that would change the court system. Whereas now there's a limit of about 30% that municipalities can use
revenue generators.
Mm-hmm. But I want to emphasize, this doesn't affect just little towns in St. Louis County. This affects all these rural towns around the state. So you've got a lot of Republican legislators who are hearing from their local officials out in rural Missouri who are not too keen about lowering that percentage. It would require them to turn over any extra money beyond that percentage to the state. So I think there'll be a lot of debate about that. But that frankly, may be one of the few. What's more likely, the legislature's been promising to hold hearings. Part of it's going to be to hammer at the governor, and part of it's going to be to hammer over some of the property laws. They're going to portray themselves as defenders of personal property rights, and that the governor allowed, you know, burnings and some other things. I mean, this is how they're going to portray it. So my point is, I think some of the efforts to make some other changes in how police operate, it may get some discussion, but I'll be surprised if it gets anywhere.
Yeah, we're going to be talking more about the Ferguson story on our program on Wednesday. But we asked members of our listening audience through our Public Insight Network to respond to what they thought the big stories were. Obviously, Ferguson was a big one. With regard to what you just said, Ronald and Kirkwood is really kind of ticked off about this. He says the businesses should have been protected by the National Guard. They're protecting government buildings in Ferguson. And another one, Stephen from Oakville writes, and Shula, I'll point this one at you. Mm-hmm. The white community's reaction to the entire story, it appears to me we haven't made much, if any, progress in the matter of race relations. What have you seen in that regard as you've watched this story unfold?
Wow, that is a tough question. I mean, certainly
that's why we gave it to you.
Thanks. certainly having the national spotlight shined on St. Louis and on a city that I think everybody who lives here would acknowledge is quite segregated has not been easy. But I think it's true that the white community has not been talking about it in the same way and with the same sense of urgency that a lot of the African American community has been discussing it. And I think without that, there's going to be an issue. It's just going to continue to be an issue moving forward, and we won't get the changes that Duane James talked about in the interview I did with him.
And Marshall, your thoughts about that? You're in the center of the state, and legislators are talking about it, but you don't expect much to come of the discussion.
Well, a lot of it will depend on what's in the bill, and to some extent, it'll depend on whether or not some powerful Republicans can back some of these bills as co-sponsors. One of the main reasons why, if you go back a few years, why the St. Louis Police Department is now run by the city instead of by the state. One reason for that, aside from the constitutional amendment, was getting powerful Republicans to support the Democrats who were carrying that bill for years. Even though the legislative approach didn't work, I think it made progress in that. And for some of these Ferguson reform bills to make it across the finish line, it's going to need some powerful Republicans to get behind them as well. And any that might step up and do that, I think we're still waiting to see that happen.
Well, we have to move along to cover some other things here. I'm sure we'll get back to the Ferguson during the course of the program. But what do you see looking back, Marshall, from your vantage point in Jefferson City, as the big story? What came out of the legislative session, for instance, you think is most noteworthy?
A good question as far as a non-Ferguson related issue as far as what came out. Two things primarily to me, for starters, the overrides of two bills, the tax cut that was vetoed by Governor Nixon and was overridden while the regular session was still going on, and then secondly, the override of the 72-hour abortion waiting period that override happened during veto session. Those two high priorities of Republicans the Republican lawmakers that Governor Nixon shot down, but got revived and passed anyway.
And Joe Manis, the GOP added to its legislative majority this time around. What impact is that going to have?
I think it's going to have a huge impact next session, because in 2014 legislative session, the House in particular generally needed a few Democrats to get a bill overridden. Now they won't. I mean, because they're going to majority is going to be so big, 117, 118, depending on who's counting. But that's nine more than is needed. So they can let a few people fly off if they want to not vote. And they won't have to worry about it. So I think it could arguably set the stage for less conciliatory efforts between the parties, because the Republicans won't need the Democrats at all in the House. In the Senate, the Republicans still have a veto-proof majority, but they often it can be tighter. So there may be still a little there. So I think the Democrats are going to find themselves more in a role in the Senate of trying to filibuster bills and doing just trying to block legislation that they don't like. I think efforts to we've been talking for a couple of years about Medicaid expansion, that kind of stuff. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. But the other thing I think is that is being overlooked as a top story, I think a top story is Dooley's defeat to continue as St. Louis County executive and the narrow victory by Steve Stenger in the general election. I think that's going to have fallout.
I want to pick up on that and spend some time on it. But first, we're going to bring in Amanda Vinicky. Our listeners know Amanda very well. She's the State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. Amanda, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk to you again. Seems to me there are two things in particular that stand out when we look back on the last year in Illinois. One is politics, and the other is pensions. Right?
There you have it. Isn't that always the story for Illinois of late, it seems? And we did have really a big year for the 2014 elections. The first Republican governor will be inaugurated at the start of 2015 after a race that took up really all of 2014, it seems.
What difference is that going to make?
What difference is that going to make? You know, it could be pretty darn big, because you still have super majorities of Democrats in the Illinois General Assembly. And so Democrats will very much be able to get their way. But we have not seen a lot of success, many people, I think, would feel, with one-party rule. So having a Republican governor come in there, I think it's going to change the dynamic of the legislature. Republicans are going to likely be asked to take some hard votes that they've been able to steer clear of for in recent memory. And just in general, Bruce Rauner, both the promises he's made and the agenda that he plans to set. We had in Pat Quinn somebody who favored a permanent extension of a 2011 income tax increase. Rauner saying that he wants total upheaval, really, of the tax code. And it remains to be seen whether he'll have any success with these major changes that he's promised because of Democratic leadership elsewhere. But if he follows through on what he has said, Illinois could be very much looking different in 2015 than it has been for the past, you know, decade, dozen years or so.
Is there a learning curve here for the new governor?
This is a guy who says, and really is confident, that he's been successful in anything that he's ever done. And yet, and he clearly was, his first foray into politics, won the GOP nomination and the governor's race overall, and by bigger margins than had been anticipated. Nonetheless, he doesn't have any experience in Illinois government, and so I think that he will have a tough time of it right now, perhaps in a bit of a honeymoon period. Republicans, as I said, haven't been asked to make those hard votes just yet, so they're just excited to have one of their guys at the top. Democrats, perhaps, excited to maybe share the pain some, and it's not as if many rank-and-file legislators had great relationships with either Governor Pat Quinn or his predecessor, Rod Blagojevich. But, you know, there is a lot of people to learn, the just capital dynamics to navigate, who likes who doesn't, who's burned bridges, what any one piece of legislation has such a domino effect. And so I think Rauner is going to see challenges. And he's already said, you know, things are so much worse with the budget than I had thought. And, you know, in a way, you knock him for it, because how do you run for governor and not know? On the other hand, I know from watching Illinois politics, I'm always struck by, gosh, they messed up again. How'd they do that? So I think he'll have a hard time with that, too.
And, of course, we can't mention the last year without mentioning Judy Bartopinka, who died very suddenly just a few weeks ago. That's quite a loss.
You know, it really is. She was such a dynamo and somebody who in this age, particularly this election, it was frustrating, frankly, to cover as a journalist because so much of it was, you know, manufactured and done by ads. She was a politician who was out there, out in front, and was secure enough in herself and her political abilities to generally speak the truth and be frank about things. I think Rauner is going to miss her. She was probably one of the few people that had the gumption to tell him no, and to is somebody that he had, it seems, earned a lot of respect for and would have listened to, but she didn't need him for her future career. So she'll be missed very much in Illinois.
I'm sure Amanda Vinicky will be talking to you over the course of the next 12 months or so with regard to Illinois politics. There's always something to talk about, it would seem.
Plenty ahead in the new year, that's for sure.
Thank you so much for your help this year. A happy new year to you, and thank you for being with us.
And thank you. Happy 2015 back.
Right. Amanda Vinicky, the of Illinois Public Radio. She's the State House Bureau Chief in Illinois. We'll have to continue this conversation after a break, and we will do so. Lots to talk about, including the big race in St. Louis County that Joe mentioned a moment ago. We'll do that when we come back. Joe Manis in studio with me, along with Shula Newman. Joining us by phone is Marshall Griffin, our State House correspondent. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the big stories of 2014. With me in studio, Shula Newman and Joe Manis of St. Louis Public Radio. Marshall Griffin joins us by phone from Jefferson City. You know, I had mentioned that we'd had some response from our listeners from the Public Insight Network to some of the big stories. Obviously, the school transfer story is big. We'll get to that as time allows. But we have the county vote, Joe, that you alluded to just a moment ago. Richard of North St. Louis County says, "We have a Republican-led council in St. Louis County now. I see dim prospects for positive legislative progress during the coming term with Steve Stenger, a Democrat, at the helm of county government."
Well, he's inaccurate. The Democrats are still in control of the county council. It's 5-2. Now, with Stenger assuming that the recount and everything, which should probably be finished within the next 24 hours, that everything goes as scheduled, there will be a vote in April to fill Stenger's seat in South St. Louis County. Now, that seat has often been a swing seat. So Republicans held it before him. So depending on who the Republicans put up, there's a potential that Stenger's old county council seat potentially could be held by a Republican. But that would still be 4-3. But the problem is you've got Hazel Irby, who's the Democrat from the first district, who was a close ally of Dooley's, who is not a fan of Stenger. So the bottom line is Stenger is going to be relying on a couple of Republicans to help him get stuff through the council because of this split within his own party. Now, he's already taken some moves by picking one of the staff people to Colleen Washington, who is one of the Republicans on the council, to have a key post. And then he got Greg Quinn, who's the departing councilman from West County. He's a Republican. He's got him, at least for the time being. Quinn's agreed to be the new director of revenue.
So you think that they'll be able to get stuff done to make change, contrary to the question?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
I think the
agreement.
Well, because the question was assuming that the Republicans are controlling the council, and they're not.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, that what it will take, Stenger will need to be a bit more persuasive with certain people. But I don't think that's going to be an issue. I don't think that'll be a problem for him, at least in the short term.
And how well does he get along with the other council members as a former councilman? I imagine pretty well.
Well, yeah, as I said, he and Quinn and Wassinger often
right.
were tight on some stuff. I mean, see, Stenger is, okay, is a moderate to conservative Democrat, depending on the issue. In some ways, he's somewhat in the vein of Mayor Slay. In that point, Mayor Slay is conservative on some things. So I think that it's the progressive Democrats who have never been a real fan of Stangers. And so, but you only have one or two of them on the council right now. So I don't see where he's going to have a huge problem unless he tries to push some big initiatives. But I think this is why he already has said that any talk of a city-county merger is going to be off the table for a while. He wants to not step in any sort of major controversies until things are calmed down and he knows who his friends are and who his enemies are going to be on the council. So, but in the short term, I don't see that being an issue. The big issue is there won't be any huge initiatives coming out of the county, but there might not have been anyway. It wouldn't have been anyway even if Dooley had stayed.
All right. Well, I'm going to move along to something else now. This is an issue that we'll be watching. But very quickly, the recount is taking place right now.
Correct.
What happens if the result changes?
Well, there's always that possibility. But the way they do the recount, they basically are redoing the machines. And they run the machines again for the totals. When they did it for the certification, Stanger's margin went up by 100 votes. So Stanger's lead right now going into this is a little over 1,800. So the chances of that flipping are slim, unless there was some real problem with the counting that they're coming up with. But when I had talked to election officials a little over a week ago, they were indicating that they might not even charge Rick Stream, his Republican. Technically, Rick Stream has to pay for it if it's just, I mean, they're going to be running the machines. Now, he could try to demand, go to court and try to demand a lot more done, but then he would have to pay for that.
Again, turning to our Public Insight Network response here, Sharon says the school transfer case is the big story of the year, discounting apparently Ferguson and the rest of it. Marshall, let me turn to you. It was a big issue throughout the last legislative session, and I assume it will surface again next year. I guess we can say next year now, next month.
It being a pretty major issue for the 2015 session as well, especially it's unfinished business, obviously. For the first time, a bill actually got passed. You know, for several years, this issue tried to somehow address the student transfer law and the court rulings. Just kept getting hung up in committees, never advancing. Well, this past year, or 2014, earlier this year, finally something gets out of the House and Senate, gets on the governor's desk, and it gets vetoed. The main sticking point for the governor was the provision that would allow some transfers to private schools, which was viewed as a way to get vouchers in under the door. You know, kind of crack the door open to allow vouchers to become part of the educational structure of Missouri. So something's going to have to give somewhere because this bill's going to come back again, whether vouchers or private school vouchers will be a part of it again remains to be seen, but I'm guessing that there's still going to be a big push for this because a lot of the supporters said this bill doesn't get done without it, and of course those on the other side says there's no way this will become a law. So unless the voucher issue will be the turning point on whether or not this actually makes it this coming year.
And that big Republican majority obviously can toss its weight around.
Absolutely, even more so now.
Well, and of course you have certain donors, notably
Rex
Ziegfeld,
yeah,
who's the largest donor in the state, who has been an advocate of some of these changes. So we'll be following where the donations flow. Because one question will be, how active does he get in this discussion?
But, of course, he's thrown a lot of money around in the past, and his record is not terrific in terms of success, given his projects and the amount he's spent.
Well, he has a blimp now. Maybe that'll help.
A blimp?
Yeah, the Rex Zeppelin.
Well, I think it depends. I think you could say that, okay, on candidates, his record hasn't been real strong. On issues, it's sort of split. He was the one who did bankroll getting the city of St. Louis control of its own police department. He has not been successful in his effort to get rid of Missouri's income tax, but at least it started the discussion going, and his groups did lobby heavily to get this tax cut through this last session. So in some ways, he is learning, that he has to get some of this incremental stuff. So, and some of his allies were the among those who were in favor of the transfer bill that got vetoed because of the voucher provisions. So I think he could wield some influence. I said you kind of watch to see who gets the various donations. But also, it's not just the donations. It's the various lobbyists and other people that he has working for him. And he has some of the more influential ones in the state working for him.
And we should point out, too, before we move along, that there is a new education commissioner in Jefferson City now, Margaret Van Deven, replacing Chris Nicastro. That will unfold as to her effectiveness during the course of the next several months. Let's move on to something else now. Time is going by so quickly. I want to get to what I think is a very, very big story locally, and sure, I'll toss one this one your way, and that is the same-sex marriage in the city of St. Louis, which is now expanded. It's before the courts. Your thoughts about that story?
Well, I think a lot of people might be surprised by this, but it really is part of a national trend in the courts right now. I mean, I think there's 35 states now that have legally approved same-sex marriage, and then several others where the appeals courts are pending or deciding that basically they're going to overturn these state laws that were passed about, what, a dozen years ago now?
Some less, yes.
Yeah, more or less. So really it's part of a trend. I think it's interesting, though, that we had three cases that just boom, 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 basically knocked down the law banning same-sex marriage. And I think it's even more interesting that, you know, even as these laws were, you know, overturned and the city of St. Louis started marrying same-sex couples, you know, along comes Chris Koster saying, well, I'm going to contest this, even though he has come out personally as being in favor of same-sex marriage. So it's an interesting conundrum.
Well, he pretty much has to do that.
He does. It's part of his job. Right?
Yeah, as Missouri Attorney General, because Missouri has a 10-year-old ban in the Constitution against same-sex marriage. But it does – the political aspects of this are kind of complicated. On the one hand, it does highlight the geographical differences between rural Missouri and urban Missouri.
Right.
And it also highlights how while conservatives are on the ascendancy, it's some conservatives. I mean, there was this coalition of economic conservatives and social conservatives that helped get major gains 10 years ago, not just on this issue but on other issues. And on getting Republicans in control in a number of states. This changes things because you've got a number of economic conservatives who are now saying, well, we don't really need that. We don't want to get into people's personal lives on their sexual orientation. Well, then all of a sudden you're seeing this split. You're seeing some of this going on in Jeff City between people who are allegedly on the same side but who aren't on this issue. So I think during the General Assembly, you're going to have some of the social conservatives and, like, you know, some who propose bills that require a man to approve whether or not a woman can get abortions. And then you're going to have fiscal conservatives who before had gone along with it who are saying, no, we're not going to do this anymore. So I think that's going to possibly one of the major stories coming out of Jefferson City. Because the Republicans are so much in control, the focus is going to be on the divisions within the GOP ranks on such issues such as this.
What do you think, Marshall?
I do see that as an emerging story for 2015. A larger party does not necessarily mean a united party. There is definitely going to be the rift between the social conservatives and the fiscal conservatives or the economic conservatives, as Joe was pointing out. It's possible that it could give the same-sex marriage rulings could give a little more energy to those who have been trying to get legislation passed to end discrimination based on sexual orientation, because it's still technically legal in Missouri to get fired based on your sexual orientation. And the incoming House Speaker has said that he's more interested in, you know, advancing business-friendly pieces of legislation as opposed to a social conservative agenda. But as to whether or not John Deal would actually go along with pushing for an end to same-sex discrimination in the workplace or being able to be fired for that remains to be seen. But I don't see him as being as opposed to it as his predecessor, Tim Jones, who actively said we will not push for that.
Well, of course, this whole issue may come before the Supreme Court this term, too. The court has kind of punted on the issue in the past years, but it could, in fact, come up this time. You're nodding, Shirley. You agree?
I have heard that, yes, it is quite likely the Supreme Court's going to take this one up.
And the Missouri Supreme Court is dominated by judges who are appointed by Democrats.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the U.S. Supreme Court with regard to
Yeah. That's true. And the U.S. Supreme Court is a little more tighter. But I think it will become a big issue in the Missouri governor's race because there will be some of these parts of this that will end up before the Missouri Supreme Court, I think. And you've got Attorney General Chris Custer, who's a Republican turned Democrat, who's running for governor. And then you've got some of the Republicans who are running for governor or will be probably State Auditor Tom Schweik. And you've got Catherine Hanaway, the former speaker, has already announced. And this is one of the issues where the Republican candidates – haven't really talked about it, and they're probably going to have to.
Only a minute left. And Mr. Custer, however, may be in a little hot water himself with regard to his political future.
Well, I think he's tried to stem it by after this story came out in the New York Times this summer that made him look bad, particularly among
a pay-to-play story.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he was denying its premise, but in any event, it's the kind of publicity if you're a candidate running for governor you don't want. But soon after that, then he announced self-imposed restrictions on what sort of donations he'll take and the fact that if somebody's got an active case before his office, he's no longer going to take a donation from him. And he's trying to turn the tables by trying to get the General Assembly to take something similar regarding them. So he's tried to shift the argument. So with everything else that's been going on, Ferguson and all this other stuff, some of this type of controversy is the thing that so far hasn't really shown to have legs. But things could change. But I think the same-sex marriage and some of the other issues is something that you're going to see Custer and the Republicans really tangle over.
Less than a minute left. Marshall, a final thought from you. What are you looking forward to in the next months?
I'm looking forward to a lot of business-friendly bills, a lot of bills addressing Ferguson, and it'll be interesting to see where Governor Nixon goes with his State of the State address this time around, which direction he takes and how much attention he spends addressing Ferguson, given the public reaction, given public reaction and also giving reaction from his own party to how he handled it.
Sure. A thought?
But I'm also very curious to see how Ferguson will continue to have a ripple effect on all kinds of policy decisions moving forward.
It's not going to go away, Joe.
No, it's not. But I think, as I said, I think the General Assembly is going to be resistant to most of the more aggressive bills to make changes.
Going to have to leave it there. Folks, thanks so much for being with us. I want to thank Shula Newman for being with us. Joe Manis, thank you both in studio. Marshall Griffin has joined us from his post at the state capitol in Jefferson City. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Have a very happy 2015. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the history of Belleville and the city's Walk of Fame as its bicentennial year comes to a close. Then we'll talk with Belleville resident and golfer Bob Golby, who won the Masters in 1968 and was in the inaugural class of inductees into the Belleville Walk of Fame. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. This program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.